Katie, how you
doing? I'm great.
Magnificent. Is that short for Catherine?
It is not. It's short for Caitlin.
Ooh, I love that. Do you commonly get that mistake?
No, well, kind of, yes. But I think most people know me as Katie and like don't question it.
They don't even dive deeper. That must be a thing about Katie's, because everyone assumes Rob is Robert and I'm not. So I got to constantly deal with that.
Okay. So you kind
it's not the biggest problem it to have, but it is, you know, it's my own cross to bear.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm great. You know, I really appreciate it. I don't normally point out the time of day when I do the podcast, but I had to push this and it's late. It's like 9 o'clock, almost 9:30 where you're at, and you're taking the time to talk to me, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm a night owl, so I wouldn't stress. It's okay.
Are you?
A little bit. I try not to go to bed too late, but I do like the nighttime. Yes.
Is that an adult Katie, like living her adult life in the city vibe? Or is that like all the time your whole life you've been like up at nighttime?
Well, there's two things there. One, I'm actually not living in New York. I'm there like every weekend, but I actually live in Princeton, New Jersey. So
I very much, and I should assert this, that is a fair assumption. When I said living in the city, I mean, I just kind of meant in that broad adult, like I'm living in the city doing my thing. But I didn't assume where you were. I just knew you were on the East Coast because you said that. But you said Princeton, New Jersey. Let's, yes. Okay, I'm going to get, okay, note taken. Let's get back to the insomnia question about your restless evenings.
You were saying? No, I don't have insomnia. I just like sleep. I think for a really long time, the reason why I would get up in the morning was my alarm clock. And, you know, I was always on time and very punctual. And then I think after I graduated school, I was like, let me not have my alarm clock on. Let me just like sleep in for a little bit to see like what my body wants. And I think I just like sleep, but then sometimes that makes me stay up late. And then, but the, like, also I did a shoot this past weekend and it was a 6 to 6 and I was fine. Like I can get up.
Which six but, to which six?
Oh gosh. 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. No, but there was one time I did a 7 p.m. to a 7 a.m. and that was hard.
What were you doing on this set?
This most recent one?
Yeah, this the well, you said the 6 to 6. What were you doing?
Yeah, so that was an NYU short. It was a thesis film for a student there. She's lovely. Her name's Eleanor. And I just thought the script was really funny. I'm kind of particular about the projects that I act in. I have to like the script. I think like post-graduation, I realized like what it is for me that I like about acting, because I graduated from the drama school. And I liked the script. And so that's what we did this past weekend.
Got it. Student film. Why and how are you doing stuff with NYU when you live in Princeton? And why are you living in Princeton? Are you from Princeton? Where are you from?
Yes and no. So I'm from a small town in New Jersey called Pennington. But no one really knows where Pennington is. And
north, south, or middle? That's the Jersey question.
Central.
Ooh, Central Jersey. Yes.
Which just became an official place.
I've always kind of thought it deserved its own thing. Because let's be honest, South Jersey, you're just really Philadelphia. You know, you're just really in that vibe. You don't have your own thing. And so to pretend it's north and south, it's kind of north and middle, and then the rest of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm from Texas, so I'm allowed to have wild ass opinions about East Coast states and not have any, you know, stake in it at all. I was born in Dallas and I grew up in Austin, sort of like half and half. And then my family also generationally owned a farm that I grew up on and off of, kind of in the middle of nowhere. So a little bit of everything, little city, little country. I think that's why I used that expression earlier when I was like living your life in the city. Cause to me, it's like when you get older, you move to a bigger city, at least for a while. That's like a thing. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that way growing up in New Jersey? Like, was New York a thing you wanted to do? Was it like
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't wait to get out of suburbia and go. I mean, my parents or my grandparents, my family, we would always go into New York on the weekends. They would take me to some Broadway shows. Like, I remember seeing Beauty and the Beast and going to a lot of museums, going to the Guggenheim, going to the Met, and just loving New York and very much wanting to live a bohemian artistic lifestyle from a very young age. And I ended up doing that, which was very exciting. And I think only after living in the city, because right after school, I moved to Bushwick, and that allowed me to appreciate Princeton and suburbia and what's not. But also, I work at Princeton now, so I kind of have to be here.
So. You work at the university?
Yes, I do.
What That's do you my do job. At the university?
I'm in their film department, and mostly, yeah, it's been really fun. Somewhat recent, a couple months now, but I'm an editor for them. But it's like their editors do color, they do sound. It's all like post-production type of things.
So, editor's kind of like a catch-all thing everything after they're done shooting it.
Mm-hmm. But it's been fun because I didn't know that at first. And then when they were like, oh, no, you're also going to do these things, I was like, OK, great. I get to I know like some basic things about mixing and about color, but I've learned a lot since working here, and mostly think like historical, like documentary type of work, because these professors are just talking about and fellows are talking about very esoteric, very erudite things, and I have to condense that into shorter videos.
Like, well, you seem capable of doing intellectual kind of stuff. You just said esoteric and erudite in the same sentence, so there's something very intellectual going on in your head, Katie. Those are big words.
Like synonyms, but yeah, I mean, it's fun. Today, I'm working on a quantum physics project, so
that's
pretty gnarly, yeah.
Okay, let's back up. This is getting like already complex. And I apologize for anyone listening if this is too esoteric for you. I feel like we're in a wonderful territory. I'm going to back up a little bit though.
Okay, sorry. I got excited.
No, I love the excitement. I love the enthusiasm. I just want to crack it open a little bit, because all of a sudden you're sounding a lot like a film student, and you did not go to film school, Katie. So let's back up a little bit and let me straighten this out. So siblings, question mark?
No siblings.
Solo Katie.
Yeah,
Got it. When do you said you're very young, use the word bohemian. What to you was attractive at a young age? And what do we mean by young age when we're saying like we're into the idea of moving to New York and bit what you saw Rent at what age? Is the question.
I don't think I saw Ren.
I'm joking with you. When did that mentality?
I think that was before I was born. I'm pretty sure, because that was like 95.
It ran for a long time.
That's true. That's true. I think when it opened, but
yeah, no, it was on Broadway for like 20 years. So it's a window. I saw it in high school, and I'm not Jesus Christ.
That's true. All right.
Feel a thousand. Well, but so when did you start feeling that vibe of like, that would be a cool ambition, let's go run away to the city, and bohemian is attractive to me?
I liked performing. I liked art. I liked culture, and like New York has that, and where I'm from doesn't really. I mean, there are some elements, but not really, not to the extent that New York City has. And so I think being around that energy was very, very exciting to me, and doing it through artistic ways, that was very appealing to me.
What did you manage to do artistically in Pennington in like middle school? What are you getting to do? Like musicals, some theater, choir? Yes, what's up?
Yes and no. For a while I did soccer, and so I was not really artistic for a while. Although I was like, they make you take like violin class and painting class and whatnot. But I always was in summer camps. And
you were more jockey though.
A little bit. I did sports for a while.
Okay.
I made varsity volleyball in my junior year of high school too. So
it's pretty jockey, dude.
Yeah, but then I was the lead in like the play, and then I was like, oh, can't do it. Sorry.
You know what's weird about that? Let me pause for that. I'll share a brief thing, story. I don't know how many times this has come up. I might have said this once on the podcast. So I went to high school in Texas, but I went to two high schools. And in between those two high schools, I went to school in New York City. So I went to school for freshman, sophomore year in Texas, in one part of Austin, moved to Manhattan junior year, came back. End of junior year and senior year, I was at another high school 20 miles from my first one in Austin. And they could not have been more different. And I'd moved so many times, and I'd gone to a lot of Texas public high schools, even that I didn't go to for different reasons. Friends went there, whatever. But the culture of these two high schools in this two different town were so dramatic. At the first school, there was no crossover really between extracurricular groups. The band kids didn't also do auto shop, and there certainly weren't any jock athlete people in the plays. That like wasn't a thing. Like theater and choir people were those dorks, and then which I was a part of, and then the, you know, and even choir and theater, when it's time for the musical crossover. Otherwise, separate groups of people, kind of a lot of the time. Because it was such a big school too. There was enough people for that to be like a whole group.
How big was your school?
I want to say it was probably like 4,500 kids, maybe.
Wow.
Something. It was okay. A big school. It was really big. And watch me be crazy wrong about that, but that's what I remember. And this was like, I graduated 2006. So we're talking like, this is like 2003, 2004. I moved to New York, totally different thing. I went to like a performing arts high school in the city for a year. I come back to Texas and we're going to do the musical, right? The big musical. Mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, the schedule for the musical is going to be, it was in the fall. And they were like, we're going to do, it'll be Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Saturday, two shows on Saturday and a Sunday. And I was like, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday? Who doesn't do a show on fucking Friday night? That's the craziest shit. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, oh, well, we can't because of the football game. And I was like, you're just not going to do the play because of a football game. And at my other high school, which was even bigger, was like, that was crazy. Like it's two different groups of people. Honestly, it's not going to even be the same groups of people coming out. This school was like, not only is the head cheerleader in the play, two football players are also in the musical.
Wow.
And no one would come because everyone in the school and everyone in this little part of the town goes to those football games.
Sure.
Like it's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. The idea, I felt so crazy because the idea of a cheerleader or an athlete being in the fucking play had never even occurred to me that that would take place. That sounds like an Amanda Bynes movie. That's not a real thing, but like it literally was. And it's like, it's funny to me. And I'm, of course, at School of the Arts, I met a lot of people like yourself with different stories. I mean, a guy in my class, Eric, he like gave up a career in BMX. Like that was the other thing. He was like, I don't know. And then he like went to drama school at the last minute. Cause he was like, I don't want to get hurt. That was like his reason. But to me, it was so, it seemed so divorced, athletics and then acting. And then I got to School of the Arts and I was like, how are you guys all cut? Everybody's like ripped up.
Well, they do make you go through all of those.
Yeah, but some of them are like that when they got there.
That's fair. That's fair. Well,
and
I
talked to them and they're like, I gave up BMX. I was varsity volleyball and shit. Stuff like that.
Yes. But also like my school did have a division to some extent because also like it has to do with the season. So like a lot of the time it does conflict. So you do have to pick one or the other. So that does create that division. So you're not entirely wrong. That was also kind of the case. I was just, I don't know. I liked volleyball, so whatever. But I left
it after. Are you tall? It's hard to tell.
I am 5'8", yes.
Yeah, that's a tall chick. My wife's tall. She's like 5'7", too. Which and she's Korean. So like, she's like a foot taller than everybody in her family.
That's fine. I like being tall.
Yeah, I think it's a cool thing. Honestly, I'm a big fan. I think everybody should be tall except for men. I think all the people except for the men should be tall. All right, so let's get back on track here. We're talking about you. We're talking about you playing volleyball. When did you learn how to fucking edit?
Well, because you were like, what do you mean you're doing film stuff? You didn't go to film school, which is very true.
What's the path on that skill set?
Yes. So after graduation, I mean, you were in the drama program, right?
I was. I was Gerald Friedman's last directing student. So directing major, and I was like his last class.
Yeah. So you probably know that for the most part, at least the drama program is rooted in classical training. So there's a lot of stage work. There's a lot of theater training. Like, yes, you do some film work. I was fortunate enough to have some training with Bob Krakauer because of Scott being there, which was great. I walk with those teachings every day. He's a fantastic teacher. But for the most part, it was a stage theater training.
Yeah, it's
program.
A theater school.
So, yeah. And also, like, up until that point, like, I loved and I still love plays, obviously. But like all throughout high school, I was doing a bunch of theater in terms of like stage managing, directing, writing, acting. Like I was doing a bunch of different things, just all in the theater world. And then after leaving school, I moved to the city and like was auditioning and just setting my roots. But then the pandemic happened. I graduated in 2019. So I had some time before the pandemic hit I graduated, which was nice, but also like strange because all these seeds that I was planting were being stripped away.
Sure.
And then for a really long time, everything was shut down. And I moved back home after just the city shut down and the work shut down. And I was like, I'm not going to continue paying this rent.
It's a wild ass place to be during that pandemic.
And also I'm from Jersey. So like a couple of my friends who were from California, I think like were unfortunately stuck there. Whereas like I could drive home or like my mother ended up picking me up, which was very helpful. Very fortunate for that. But I could not live at home for a really long, like I think I lasted a couple months until I had to leave. But during that time when everything was shut down, me and my friends were kind of going crazy that we were like, let's just make a movie because clearly we can't make theater. Mm. We have some film stuff. Let's just do something. One of my friends, who's now my partner in more ways than one, had a script. We were like, let's just do it. We'll figure it out and try. And that was really the seed of everything that I've done since. And that was a truly enlightening moment because kind of going backwards. Once I got to School of the Arts and like learned the process of theater, I realized I love theater, but I think to some extent it made me not like the process of theater. Whereas when I was working on film, I was like, oh my gosh, this is immediately collaborative right from the get-go. There's technical elements. And like I, in high school, again, like I stage managed, I did sound, I did lighting.
Why did you pick acting for education?
That's the first
part of this question before we even get to the second part, because you're already taking it for granted that it makes sense that you ended up here. You are clearly, and I don't mean to interrupt you, though I already have, so I'm going to finish my thought. You are clearly a very intelligent person. You are also someone that seems, I mean, you've got charisma and you've got some energy, and that combination of stuff is pretty unusual, honestly, out in the world. You could do a bunch of different stuff. You clearly also have a bunch of different interests. You've got this very broad, I don't know, entertainment, art, I like all of it. I just keep touching all these different parts and I kind of like this, I kind of like blah, blah. I'm very interested in, and this podcast is very interested in, this is where that agenda part comes in. I don't know I'm going to get to this until it comes up, but why pick a conservatory when you have that kind of broad, like what you're describing as a personality sounds like a liberal arts salesman's about to walk in and be like, you know, you might be perfect for taking a whole bunch of random shit. Like, sure. But yet you picked conservatory and it wasn't in your neighborhood. For acting, which it doesn't even sound like of all the things that you've talked about so far, it's like the thing you're the most interested in. So help me understand.
So, and it's funny that you say that, because I remember when I first learned what a conservatory was, I was a freshman in high school. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, why would anyone do that? And then lo and behold, that's what I ended up doing. But a couple things. One, I knew from a very young age that I wanted to be in the entertainment industry. I think from seeing various people in my life be unhappy with their work was informative to me to choose something, to dedicate my life to something that I really am passionate about and to like the work that I'm doing.
I feel that.
I know people always say that, like, you know, you're still going to work even if it's your passion, which is true. But I think, like, to find something that you are endlessly curious by is what can make the work worth it, even though, like, you know, so.
Yes.
That's one thing. I think also I learned in, like, history class that in the Depression, people were still going to the movie theaters. And I was like, that's fascinating about human psychology, that even during the Great Depression, we still need humor. We still need levity. We still need to see ourselves, or like an escape, or what have you. We still need art. And so that was interesting to me, because I was like, oh, this will never
dry up.
Like, we'll always need this. Obviously, the pandemic was like, ooh, we're still going to take this away. But, like, also at the same time, people are watching, like, Netflix all the time. So,
yeah, but not even just Netflix. It's not just the conventional stuff. It's like Seth Meyers went into his fucking closet and everybody found a way to keep, because not only does the economy rely on a lot of these jobs, so we couldn't stop making the things. Like, we have to put something on the TV. It has to air something. We can't just be like the color bars from the 90s when they would turn the fucking TV stations off in the middle of the night. Like, they don't do that anymore. And not only that, the internet needs stuff. So everybody rushed to, I'm going to do a series where I make chairs, and I'm going to do a thing. Like, that filled a lot of that vacuum. Mm-hmm. Not just the conventional stuff, because obviously we couldn't go into a sound stage and shoot a movie on a green screen like we've been doing for everything lately, but we could do something in our backyard. And there's, like, I don't know, I'm gonna pull a number out of my ass, at least 5 to 10% of the people who try to do some random weird shit like that during the pandemic that are, like, now refocused.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, so, actually. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting recalibration to have. So, but the acting thing, to go back to it, why choose that?
So, well, two other things really quickly.
Yeah.
My father died when I was very, very young. And, like, humans conceptualize death, like, children conceptualize death around, like, 7 or 8. But my father passed when I was, like, 2. And so I had to, I think, develop a concept of death very, very early on. And I really do think me learning how finite life is at a very young age has colored my whole trajectory. Because I'm like, okay, well, I got one shot at this. So again, might as well do what I like, even though it might be challenging and hard. I gotta give it my all and see, because, and I mean, you know, it's kind of cliche and cheesy, because people always say, like, by the end of their life, they're like, oh, I regret what I didn't try to do. So I think that's,
you're not going to be saying that, though.
I don't, hope not. We'll see, but I don't think
so. You're right. No, you're totally right. I appreciate the, first of all, the candidness and also the self-awareness to point that out about yourself, and to, you know, as a person who, I spent a lot of my younger life very cynical because I thought it was fun and it was easier to make jokes. But I think the older that I get, the more I try to find the fun in being sincere and try to find the joy in optimism, which is something that I used to kind of mock. And I am such a fucking silver lining dude now. And I get through the world. My wife and I talk about this all the time. She's a therapist. And she's helped me to understand that I get through the world by always doing that, not to a point where it's delusional and it's that kind of false positivity where you're like, everything's fine. No, but, like, with that, there is this, there is fallout from every major thing. And with every trauma, there is an opportunity for crazy growth. And I think you absolutely have no choice, in my opinion, feel how you want. You have no choice in the situation that you're in, losing 50% of your parents before you're allowed to think about it in English. Before you can process it in a language, you must find a way to positively cope with that, or you lose. You lose in life from that, and that's not fair. And that's not how anybody wants their kids to be, struggling and losing in life, no matter what. And I love the idea that what you pull from that is gratitude, because you're also objectively fucking right. You should be grateful for the one shot that you have in life. And I didn't, man. I hate anyone to go through trauma or pain, but whatever you need to go through to learn that lesson, learn it quick, because mm-hmm. it makes a huge difference. Is it not? It's made an entirely huge difference on your life, it sounds like, that idea.
I think so. And I think not being fearful of death. I understand, I think, why society is so scared of it, but it's like, it's going to happen, you know, regardless.
Why do you think you're not like lifelong afraid of death, though? You could have gone the other way. It could have just been something that you've never really been able to process. And you're always like, oh, no, it's going to happen to me or something. But you're not like that. You're the opposite.
Well, I think also I've almost died a couple times because I'm so allergic to some things that like I've almost died that I'm
what's
like,
almost oh. killed you, Katie?
Cashews and pistachios.
No, that's one of my favorite things on earth. You hear that a lot.
Yes, everyone's like, they're the best nuts. And like, that's why I also, to some extent, had to stop being a vegan, because they put them in everything. And I was like, can't do it anymore, guys.
Oh, that is so true. I didn't think about that. Oh, man, that's brutal. I got a friend of mine who has that same issue. That is absolutely tough. I don't eat pasta. Not because I'm allergic to it, but because I don't like the texture of noodles from some like stuff that happened to me when I was really young. And so like, I just don't eat any, like from lasagna to ramen, I don't fuck with noodles like at all. And it's very rare that I get the experience of hearing someone else be like, this whole thing is completely out of my life. And I like feel that heartbreak that you get. And that's how other people feel when they, I saw it on your face when I said the pasta thing.
Well, also like, my grandmother's,
you hurt for me.
Well, and my grandma's 100% Sicilian. So like pasta, and also I just like got a pasta maker recently. So like, I'm sorry.
I think I've mentioned it already. I'm married to a Korean woman. And I mean like 100%, not like, you know, like a little, I'm mixed. There's not, her parents are from Korea. This noodle thing, I gotta be so grateful for the Korean barbecue concept, because they're very meat heavy. And I'm very carnivorous, so I substitute.
Well, so you can't even do like rice noodles? Like, is it?
I like rice.
Okay.
I like straight up rice. I'm good with rice. That's a good starch for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't need the noodles.
You get older and you realize what you like and what you don't like, and that's okay. Or what you can and cannot eat, and that's okay.
Yeah, what could kill you? What do you have any good stories about like almost? Like, actually, did you actually like, oh my God, holy shit, I'm like one EpiPen away from the end of the world?
What happened? Oh, honestly, like yesterday or 2 days ago, I had a little mini moment, but no, it's fine.
I've only known you for 43 minutes, but like, you seem cool. Please don't go away.
No, thank you. But the good story is in, I think, 2016, it was the first summer after School of the Arts. I was home, I was working. And I ate out at a restaurant, and I always tell everyone, like, I have an allergy, and they were like, no nuts, no nuts. But I had one bite and I was reacting as if I was having an allergic reaction. But they were like, no nuts, no nuts. So I didn't take my EpiPen. I didn't take my Benadryl. And I was like, okay, there's no nuts. What's going on? And then it went away for a little bit. I was like, that's odd. And then 20 minutes go by because I have to like walk to my car, and my stomach starts to really, really hurt. I start to feel a little loopy. And another 20 minutes go by, and I'm driving, and the stars are really crazy. They're kind of moving. And I'm like, uh-oh, what's happening? Here we go. And then I get home. And I'm like, Mom, I think I'm having an allergic reaction. Like, things are crazy. And so she calls 911. She starts freaking out. The ambulance comes. The people are like, what drugs did you take? Like, it's okay. Just let us know. And I was like, nothing. Like, nothing. I promise. And so I learned later on that when you go into anaphylactic shock, your blood pressure can plummet so low that you start to hallucinate, which is what was happening. And so, and then they rush me, and then I'm like on the bed in the hospital, like all the UV fluids are coming, they're pumping, and everything goes white. And like, I feel my heart kind of stop.
What?
and then they pump all these steroids in, and then I ended up being okay after, like, you know, immense pain and everything. But yeah.
Bananas. How did you feel the next day?
Probably in stomach pain, but like, I just remember when everything went white, like I was laughing. Like, I thought
that's the way to go. Fuck yeah. I hope I go laughing. That's dope. I'm sure it's just something innocuous that was just a feel. Yeah, no, 100%. I've had two surgeries in the last year and had to like go under full anesthesia. And so I was like such a fearless person for the first 30 years of my life. And then I turned 30 and now I'm like, I like my life and I'm like afraid I'm going to die all the time. And so I like had to do these two big anesthesia things. And I had so many little episodes of like anxiety and like panic attacky things leading up to the like 48 hours before I had to do them where I was like, my heart, it felt like it was beating so fast. I needed to go to the hospital and I would check my pulse and it would just be like 110, like a little racy, but not like, this is a 190. It's not crazy. And I would just be like, what is happening? And I think it's when you actually, and it can, some of it can be psychosomatic. And then obviously some of it can be allergic. So we can have it for different reasons, but your body jumps into that like freak out mode. I totally understand. I'm not a religious person, but I can't knock anybody for being spiritual, because when your body goes through certain things, things feel otherworldly. Like, it's just different. It just is like insane. And I think that even the older you get, the more you start to feel like a connection with those things. When you're young, you're just like, oh man, I stood up fast. That felt weird. Now sometimes I stand up fast and I'm like, am I on another timeline in a multiverse or something? Like, did I just skip to an, like, it just, I don't know. I sound like an insane person, but I think.
No, I think what you're getting at, what I hear is that our bodies hold memories, which is true, because also as we age, like, you have scars or you have wrinkles. Like, I think that's beautiful because, like, you are moving through time. And, like, as you develop, one, your brain, like, becomes more developed at, like, 26, that you can, like, actually conceptualize things a little bit more, but you become more perceptive, I think, as time goes on. So that makes
you're
sense.
Right. Hey, why did you choose acting for college?
Yes, going back.
Do you mind if I ask?
No, not at all. So I was good at it and I got in. Like,
there you go. That's a great fucking answer.
But also, like, I wasn't. So, like, I was really, really good at school. I was in like all the AP classes. My family was like, what do you mean you're going to drama school? What? And I think it was because like math came really easy to me. Science came really easy. Like, and I was bored. I was like, I want to challenge. And like, it got to the point where I remember in middle school, like I would kind of get annoyed with people and I would like I would tell them or like help them. Cause I was like, can we go faster? Like, let's go. So
do you ever ask for the test?
What do you mean?
You know what I mean by that? Like, no. When I was growing up, especially in elementary and middle school, high school, I pretty much completely checked out. Because I relate to almost every single thing you're saying, except for taking all the classes and doing well on them. I did really, really well on tests. And I did really, really bad on homework and like projects where I was supposed to do stuff outside of class. As long as it was in class, I did pretty good. But if you were like, go home and do this, I was like, no. So from an early age, my frustration with when I would have like parent teacher conferences and stuff like that, they would be like, what can we do? Blah, blah. And I was like, well, it seems like the system is lesson, homework, test, right? I was like, how about just do me the lessons and then just give me the test and then we're done. Fuck the quiz and the homework and all this extra nonsense. Teach me the thing. I'll prove to you I know it. And we can all go home and you can leave me alone. That's how I felt like growing up. And so that was always my argument, was just give me the test. And like three times across my whole academic career, that was like, it worked. Like in one way or another, I was able to just kind of skip the stuff if I could prove to them that I could get like a 98 on the test.
Yeah.
Which I always could.
Rock on. That's cool. No, I never did that, but hell yeah, that's great.
That seems, it just seems to me like the most effective way for the, like the smart kids, but like, cause I think it wears on your mentality. I mean, you seem to have weathered it better, but it wears on your mentality to feel like you're slowing down for everybody else. And like they tell it to you once, you get it, but everybody else needs to hear it like five or six times.
Yeah, sometimes. But then at least the school that I was in, I do think it was an anomaly of a high school that, like, once I was in those higher classes, like, things were moving fast and I very much did need to do that.
Yeah, like high school,
things. But, yeah, so honestly, like, I think I was just kind of bored and I think I had a lot of fun in drama and I was good at it. Mm. And I got into a really, really great school and I had no training and I was like,
did you get in anywhere else?
Pardon?
Did you get in anywhere else?
I got into BU for acting, and then I had visited their program like as like an accepted student to see, and I also went for UNCSA, and I was like, oh, by far, UNCSA is much better. Also, Bob Francesconi, I'm very interested to have as a teacher.
Did you get to?
Oh, yes, I did. I think I was one of his last classes. I think like 2 or 3 years after me, they still.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, in my own head, that math sounds right. So,
yeah.
Lucky. But,
yes, very much so. Very, very grateful for his teachings. But the big pull for me was that it was a BFA. And so if I knew that I wanted to be in the entertainment industry and that I knew as much as I wanted to go to a liberal arts school, and would have loved to, that I would most likely have to get an MFA. At least this was what my, like, you know, high school self was thinking.
Have to get an MFA for what?
Well, I just was reading and, like, hearing that, like, oh, if you really want to do it, you have to then, like, get an MFA in acting. Or, like, if you don't, like, get a BFA at the undergraduate level. Like,
who was telling you that you needed to get an advanced degree in fucking acting?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
You know, I don't remember.
Like, I, with all due respect, I'm sure a misguided person or journalist or what, or something on wherever person that you met. Holy shit. I was at dinner a few years ago. This is like right before the pandemic. And I had I made a conversation very awkward. There was like a bunch of people sitting around a table, and one of these girls was like very young and she was like just about to go to college, and she was from LA, and she was like, they were talking about, oh, where are you going to school? And she was like, I'm going to NYU. And I was like, oh, that's fun. School to go to. And in my head, I'm like, she's from out here, right? She's loaded. A lot of people with a shitload of money go to NYU. So it makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the most expensive schools in the world. And so, and I'm overhearing, and then she's like, people are like, what are you going for? And she's like, acting. And I was like, a very expensive acting degree. And now I'm like tripled down in my head. I'm like, she must be loaded. Like, mm-hmm. To spend that much money on that particular set of information to me is like, if you have it, sure. But sure. Whoa. Right. And then someone, and I don't know, I think I asked one way or another. I was like, so I was like, NYU, that's crazy expensive school. You got to do loans or some crazy shit. And she was like, yeah, I'm gonna have to do loans for like most of it. And in my head, the way she said it, I'm like, you mean all of it? And it was like, it scared the shit out of me that she really felt like she needed to do that. When I was like, spend 2 years, move to New York City, spend 2 years, get a better apartment than you'll get for the dorm price you'll pay to be at NYU. Mm-hmm. Take a bunch of acting classes, live in the city, have a good fucking time, get a job. Do it for 2 years. If then you want to go spend money you don't have on this thing, great. Mm-hmm. But the idea, Katie, you were like, so, I mean, maybe it's because you're so smart and you did so well growing up to hear that. What?
I said stubborn, but keep going.
But no, but my point is like, it's not you. It's this system that's been created that's taught all these kids that they need these degrees. To this day, I produce like direct and write TV shows. That's what I want to do. I also went to theater school wanting to do film and television, much like yourself, and thought the theater school was still the best education in like drama and storytelling and that kind of stuff. So that's why I picked that. And Hollywood Reporter says we're in the fucking top five best ever schools. Not one person has asked, looked, or commented on where I went to school since I graduated. Nobody. Nobody cares. They don't care whether I've got a degree. And here's the other thing. I don't have one. I have a college arts diploma. I didn't even take academics at School of the Arts. So I don't even have a bachelor's of anything. And I still get to do exactly what I wanted to do. And if I was acting, even less does anyone give a shit about any of that. It's so bonkers. It feels like a cult or something to trick so many people into thinking they can do it. I'm not diminishing the value of like going to Yale drama. Like it's fucking dope. I got mad friends who've been there. It's a cool program. I love our program. It's one of my favorite things I ever did in my life. I'm still paying it off because I'm not for money, but it's like, That's a crazy thing to me for you to think. And are you from a shitload of money, Katie? We'll put it at that bar. Are you from a shitload of money?
I'm not. And so part of the reason why I wanted a BFA was because I was like, oh, I'm getting an undergrad and grad degree at the same time. So then when I graduate, I can start working in acting. It made sense in my mind at the time.
Right. And there was no one in your whole universe, even if, and there are not enough of them in the world who know the difference to have told you. Actually, here's the thing, though, because that school that we both went to and that training is fucking really valuable. And then the training is worth it. And for the value versus these other programs, holy shit, it's such a good deal. But the idea that anyone who wants to hire you is going to look at that piece of paper ever again is absolutely nonsense. It sucks because it's both of us. There was this weird stretch. I'm not even going to do my whole speech on this because I've already done it before, but there was such a weird stretch where for a long time, people were like, college or any education after high school, honestly, that's not a job. That's for doctors, lawyers, engineers, like very specific intellectual based things, or you also go to that education if you want to be an educator. Mm-hmm. So either you need a specific education to do a very specific job, or you want to be a teacher. Otherwise, college just ain't something everybody needs to fucking do. Then there was this huge cultural wave where they convinced all of us we had to go. And then by the time you rolled around, my dear new friend, they were like, no, you need both. You can't just get the first one. You got to get the second one. You're like, well, am I going to be a fucking doctor or something at the end? Like, no, you get to be an actor in New York City. Holy shit. Not a famously lucrative gig to pay back those 2 degrees. That's so bananas. Mm-hmm. You obviously, based on the tone in your voice, you know that that's not how it works now. And that's not like your mentality about this. You also changed your mind at some point and decided you like acting, but it's not your number one interest at this point, is it?
I mean, I love acting. I want to act for the rest of my life. I just will go crazy if it's the only thing that I'm doing. Because I think, a couple things.
Yeah.
I love how the whole piece comes together. And I think so part of the reason why I ended up doing a bit more film after graduation, besides the fact that it was the only thing that I could do at the pandemic, was that I could be behind the camera. I could direct, I could write a bit more easily, a bit easierly. What's the grammar there?
Easier. Easier? A bit easier. You could direct a bit easier. You don't need the Lee, I think is no adverb. Yeah.
Adverb.
I got you.
More so than in theater. Mm. And so,
is that what you like more about it? Is that it's like more present and it feels like you're making it right now? It's like because all film is kind of devised.
Maybe. I don't.
You mentioned earlier that you really jived with the process better with film and TV. You felt like, or no. I won't put words in your mouth. What you said was the process of being at school kind of made you pull back in enthusiasm because of the process of theater. You're like, this process is not for me. Is that right?
Well, yes. And I think, you know, in school, they have to train you and like teach you. And so rehearsal periods last like 8 weeks, 9 weeks, yeah. Right? In the real professional world, that's not the case. But right. Like, I did not like being in that world for so long because it made me so in my head, where I was like, I want to know how the lighting designer interprets a moment. I want to know how the sound person, or like, I just like my favorite moment always was tech, because that's really when it becomes, in my mind, at least, more of a collaborative process. And like, film to me right from the get-go is that, and that is what is so exciting.
Did you take interest in the directing program?
I didn't. Well, because I think you had to, like, the faculty told you if you were right for it or something.
They changed it after I left, because while I was there, it was only a 2-year program, and it was basically like an MFA designed directing program that Gerald fit into the second half of the acting program. So you would take like most acting classes, but then you would sub out some for directing and then take design and DMP. And then your degree said acting/directing. But it was only a 2-year thing. So what you ended up with was people who started as actors, did that for 2 years, and then transferred into the 2-year directing program, spent the second half doing that. And then you also had people who would like have another degree from another school, like a whole 4-year bachelor's, or like they did 2 years at another school and would transfer in at the third year and do just that 2-year directing program.
Oh, wow.
So there's a fair amount of directors who only went to School of the Arts for 2 years. Because that's how the program worked. But I know they've changed it, and now for quite a while they've been admitting people as directors as freshmen.
Right, yes. I think they're still doing that. And like, my class,
can you still switch?
I think they asked, or like potentially offered it to a couple
maybe
people.
End of the year, they were like a meeting, like maybe you need that's how so. Gerald used to do it too.
Yes, I think that was the case, but I don't think that ended up actually coming to life. The director that came in like left as a director.
Okay, got it.
But
so anyway. It wasn't like there was some open door precedent set for you to be like at the end of first or second year, like, I think I'd like to do this directing program instead. That wasn't like really on the table.
No, because I still wanted to learn how to act. Like I was very much happy doing my thing.
Directing might work differently now, but back then it was like, I mean, you still took all the classes. You just didn't get to be in the shows. You were ADing the shows instead. But other than that, you still took all the same classes as the actors. Stage combat, everything.
Yeah. What else was your question?
Oh, I'm all over the place. It's not your fault. Okay. I like it. The vibe is there. We're good. And I stopped paying attention to who listens to this a really long time ago, until I get the DMs that are like, oh my God, I can't believe they told that story. We were talking about the diversity in your interests, and then you chose conservatory. And at some point there's a desire to sort of branch out. You did already mention the transition that happened for you around the pandemic and creating your own content. I do want to ask specifically though, when did you learn editing as a skill set? Do you work like in Adobe, or are you like iMovie shit back in the day, or like what? Where's that skill set out if that's your job right now?
I think because visual media is so ingrained in our culture that we can pick up on what is good editing and what's not, even if we don't actually like do it to some extent. So I think like we all have a visual language that we can access.
I agree with that.
And I also think, as someone who likes directing, editing is a way where I can like help shape narratives, which is very satisfying.
Yeah, absolutely true.
By just the work that I was doing, so I guess necessity, I was the editor, and I learned how to do it.
So you just like teach yourself Premiere or something?
Kind of. First I started on DaVinci just because we had a Blackmagic, and like
that
system is like, you know, paired
transfers easy. Yeah.
Yeah. Which was also where I learned how to like gently color. Like, I'm not very much an expert, but like, you know, watch the levels, bring them down, all these things. And so
looking at waveforms and shit.
Exactly.
Love that.
Get in the nodes and whatnot. But
you're such a dork. This is fun. Get in the nodes, she said, folks. Did you catch that? We're in the nodes at this point, an hour in.
And you know, Adobe is not anything crazy. Obviously, it has its own.
It's super intuitive. Premiere is great. It's a really, really good program for, and especially for people. And I tell it to people too. Anyone listening, all these people that DM me after listening to the show, being like, "How do I make a podcast and shit?" Fucking learn how to. Everyone learn how to use Adobe Premiere. Everybody, if you make anything that has any video element, just learn how to use that shit. Mm-hmm. It's so great.
And Princeton has the Adobe Creative Suite, and so
that's the cloud. Yeah, awesome.
Know how to do it.
It's a good opportunity too, because then you can like teach yourself others. If you wanted to learn like After Effects or something like that, which is also really fun.
Mm-hmm. So by the work I learned.
Yeah. By way of doing the actual process of making stuff, which honestly, I think for me, I mean, you can't beat that as a learning process. Let's talk future-y stuff, because that's interesting to me. I think now based on everything that you've said, what do you want to make? And let me be more specific. I feel like when I was at school, people would come back, whether it were alumni or guest artists or whatever, they would always say like, and even though I watched like documentaries, like BTS stuff about my favorite movies and TV shows, the people who make them always say, make the thing that you don't see out there, that you're like, how come no one's made this, or how come, you know, or at the very least take a thing that you really like and really try to make your own version of that thing. Start there. Like, if you love The Office, make your office, whatever it is. Maybe it's not in the style anymore to shoot at mockumentary like they did in like 2005, but whatever that thing is, if there, whatever it was about that piece of art that you really jive with, they say the same thing for music, right? Like, if you like Hendrix, like, what's your version of that? Mm-hmm. For you at this point in your journey of being out of school for a few years, we're out of the pandemic, we're back to shooting the kinds of stuff that you like to make, where we can all be in the same spot. You've got your skill set a little bit more fleshed out. You got a job. That's pretty good. What do you want to make? What's the thing that you're like, man, it'd be cool if I got to, even if you just did it once, one movie or one show or one thing, like, what's that story that you feel like you want to tell?
Well, so I think in that way. Ooh. I want to create more of a community. I have a production company called Raw Daisies that mostly does film stuff. However, last weekend was our first foray into the theater, which was very exciting. Yes, it was a huge success. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And so it's not necessarily like one particular story that I want to tell. I think it's mostly the people that I want to work with and do the work with. I want to tell, like, you know, strong stories and important stories, but like that also is subjective. And so to me, what is really crucial, I think, to my artistry is finding a community of like-minded artists. And so after I graduated, I had, like, for instance, like, booked a play, and I was doing the actor thing, and that was very exciting, and it was a great play. But I realized that it was too nomadic for me, and that actually wasn't the life that I wanted. And I didn't know that until that happened. And I realized that what I missed was working with my friends and figuring it out together and writing stories and like sending scripts. And so it's hard for me to say if there's like one particular story that I want to tell, because there's a bunch.
I'm also trying to get a grip on your style as an artist. I mean, if I go to see something that says Katie on it, am I likely to see like Eastbound and Down, or am I likely to see like fucking the, I don't know why I just blanked. I have the, it's in my head. The Purge. I don't know why I thought of that. I was trying to think of the opposite. Just like, you know, it's like, what's the tone of the stuff that you're making with this company? Is it the same or is it all over the place?
I think it depends on the writer director. For example, my creative partner, who's also the creative director of Raw Daisies, she tends to lean more into body horror. And
horror is what you said?
Correct. So like,
I don't know what that means.
Teton, which won the Palme d'Or a couple years ago. I mean, body horror is having a moment, really.
I don't know what that means. I know what horror is. I don't know the subgenre, which I also will say up front as part of my ignorance is I do not care for the genre of horror and don't really watch any of it. So it makes sense why I wouldn't know the subgenre of body horror. Is it like your body is possessed or something?
Maybe. It could be. It also is just like gore body. So like, for instance, with Raw, that's where part of the name of Raw Daisies came from. It's okay. A film. I don't want to spoil anything, but for sure. Instance, she has like really itchy skin at one point, and you see all the like just peeling skin, and she starts, spoiler alert, she starts like eating, and so you see blood and everything, and
it makes a lot of sense to me why this hasn't made its way in my atmosphere, because I think I would punch it in the fucking face as hard as I could. With sure. All due respect to the wonderful artists involved in making this work, I cannot imagine something I'm less interested in watching than I now know. I now know the title of my least favorite, I think, maybe, genre of film.
Maybe. I mean, I hear you. It took me a really long time to get into horror. And like, it's funny that you say The Purge, because I remember like I would have group sleepovers with my friends in high school and I would like force myself to go to bed and like not watch it because I was scared. But now like it's kind of fun. And like, I think also once you're like on set, you see the behind the scenes and like how the artist like does all the things. And to me, that makes it like less scary. And like, because the content itself is like so horrific that like set has to be a good time. Otherwise, it will be a horrible time.
Sure. I speak from an ignorant place of having never really worked on the set of one. So as I understand, they're a lot of fun. They really have to be in order to produce something like that. But I think it's just also like at this point in my life, there are feelings, emotions, sensations that I've well mapped out as a person, like what feels good, what feels bad. And as an artist, obviously there's a bunch of stuff that feels bad or makes me uncomfortable that I still like, because I like getting pushed around in that way emotionally or being disturbed even in certain ways. I'm a big fan of mystery. I love mystery, but I'm a big fan of like leaving it in the dark. I'm a little squeamish just as a person. Like, I don't like gross things on my hands. I'm just like kind of grossed out by stuff really easily. Tough in all sorts of parts of my life, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not cleaning a pumpkin out for free. It's just like, there's something about that. And it's funny that you mentioned this specific genre, because I feel like I have a lot of friends and like colleagues and stuff that are very interested in this, exploring the extremes of the grotesque or the visually disturbing and pushing those boundaries to the point of like, I would never imagine this in my spare time. You would have to come up with it and show it to me. And it's that shock of that level of, I've never even considered that this might occur. And here I am watching it kind of like, it's the homeboy that makes all those weird, scary movies. Florence Pugh goes to the like.
Oh,
Ari Aster? Yes.
I love Ari Aster.
That makes total sense to me. I'm not a fan of his work, not because I don't think he's a masterful filmmaker. I really do. I don't like that unpleasant feeling of the disturbed to that level. And one of the things that is very, very difficult for me personally is watching people suffer agony in a realistic way. It's deeply disturbing and like affects me. Like I walk away from it, like not like upset and not feeling good. Sure. And there's a limit to how much I'm interested in like intentionally making myself feel badly. Like there's one thing if it's like, wow, that was really sad. And it kind of fucked me up for a couple of days. And I'm thinking about like my family and stuff, like that's a level. But to have like nightmarish level of being disturbed, I think it's like, what's the point of that if it doesn't jive with you? If you walk out of it being like, that was fucking dope, like that was crazy with the fucking thing. Like if that's how you feel, obviously there's gotta be those people. But it's just like, and I kind of wish I could get that. Cause there's certainly been, I like horror more when I was younger. When I was a younger person, but I think the longer I've been around and the more I've seen agony and been in agony and like felt those levels of pain, like, yeah, even just the right blood curdling scream in a regular movie. And I'm like, affected. Yeah, I'm too empathetic.
It goes back to what you were saying earlier. Like you have learned that you don't want to eat pasta and maybe now you just don't want to watch horror movies and that's okay. And that's fine.
I love a good, like Silence of the Lambs. I love a good like Red Dragon is one of my favorites. It's more of a mystery. What would you call that? Red Dragon is the prequel with Ed Norton.
Oh, okay. Okay. I think I did not find Silence of the Lambs personally scary. I thought it was more of a thriller. The only moment that I thought was scary at the very, very end when it's in the like green vision, dark, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're in the house and they're like trying to catch each other.
He almost touches her. It's like the shot lasts a little bit too long. That's to me what was scary. Mm. Otherwise, I thought it was fun. So I don't know.
Do you think the genre, do you think a piece of art qualifying for the genre of horror should be measured on an individual's spectrum of like fear? Or are there certain elements that make something a horror versus a, because just the way you phrased that, right? You were like, for me, it wasn't a horror because it wasn't scary except for in this tiny little piece. And a horror movie, I should be scared, but you weren't. Mm-hmm. So for you, it doesn't qualify. Is that how the genre works where it has to qualify as horror for each individual person, whether they're scared or not?
That's a good question.
I'm just like a semantic person. I like words. Yeah. I'm not trying to do anything.
I think that's a great inquisitive question.
I think a lot of people would say Silence of the Lambs. That's like one of those like up for like, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Like, is it horror? Is it thriller? Does it qualify? I tend to agree with you. I don't think it's horror because for me, when I think horror, at least for the longest part of my life, I would go to like slasher. Mm-hmm. That would be my first reaction. Like you say horror movie, I'm assuming Freddy, Jason, some shit like that. Then of course, in our adult lifetimes, that the genres changed quite a bit in the mainstream. There's always been weird shit. But now it's like Jordan Peele is like box office. That's not normal horror. That's like Ari Aster even is like, we're giving awards to people like this. And back in the day, that would be like a movie you wouldn't even see in a theater.
Yeah.
It'd be too weird. It's moved around.
I think that's a great question. I really think horror to some extent is just sitting in that feeling of discomfort. And I think everyone's level of it can differ. So like, for instance, I think the scariest movie that I've ever seen is Barbarian. Like that is my worst fear. And you're talking about having,
what is that movie about? Just one sentence.
Gosh, an Airbnb gone horribly wrong.
Oh, okay. The hosts are the like villains that are killing them or something.
You're not going to watch it?
No, not in a million. Here's what I do. No, here's what I do. 100%. No, I'll tell you, Katie, because this is a true fact. This is this is a little asterisk next to Rob Morris doesn't fuck with horror movies. I am hardcore into reading the descriptions of horror films on Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. I know the stories of like almost all of these horror movies that I haven't seen because I want to know the story. The story is compelling to me. They always are. They're usually good stories like that are like, oh shit, what the fuck's going on? I don't like the sensations that they put in my body while they tell me the story. And I'm more like, I want to hang out outside the movie theater and be like, crazy, right? What happened? And just have like a super fun, funny guy tell me like what happened. Like that's the version of it I want.
Read the Wikipedia page for Barbarian and then we should talk.
Okay. You said you might come to LA. So maybe when we do the second episode, we'll talk Barbarian after I read about it. I will not watch it.
But I mention it because I coincidentally was with someone from UCSA this past weekend. And she was like, I didn't think that was scary at all. But that was horrifying to me. And so I think it really, really is subjective. But I think it is being in a state of discomfort, whether it's like super extreme or not. Like, I don't know. Like, I think The Last of Us has elements of horror in it because it's just the uneasiness of sitting with something that you know probably is going to come, but you don't exactly know when.
And the concept of zombies is horrifying.
Yeah, well, that too. But
that's just period. That's a horror thing. Like, you put that monster in the movie, and how is it not? Unless it's Shaun of the Dead, and you're turning it upside down. No, I relate to that. And I was just talking to somebody recently about, have you ever seen the movie Buried with Ryan Reynolds?
I don't think so, no.
Pretty cool movie. Honestly, you would like it. And it sounds like you're pretty tough chicks, so you're not going to be scared by it at all. You're going to be like, this is fun. But when I watched it the first time, I had a blast. I was like, this is a fun movie and it's like thrilling. And I'm like, oh shit. And I will tell you in a second what it is. I will not watch it again because now, at a very different point in my life, it is my, like, one of my biggest fears. It is a movie where at the beginning of the movie, Ryan Reynolds wakes up in a box that is like coffin sized. And the shots are either like super tight on him or they're like farther away and it's all black void around him. So you just don't see anything else. That is the whole movie. You never leave this box. He wakes up to, and I'll set the premise because it doesn't spoil shit. I advise people to go watch this movie. It's very well made. He is a contractor in Iraq. He's just an American. He's a civilian. He's a contractor and his shit gets attacked like Tony Stark style. Like, and he wakes up and they've buried him with a cell phone and they're trying to get ransom for him. And he's buried alive. And it's just, and it's all in real time. There's no cuts. There's cuts, there's shots. But it happens. The movie is in real time. And the conclusion of the movie, which I won't spoil, that's the end. Like, and so it's like there, it all happens. And I'll just, obviously it's a binary thing. He either gets out or he doesn't. Either one, which happens, that the whole thing is just that. And it leads up to that moment. It's chilling. Like I said, when I first watched it, I was like, oh shit. And it's a very good story. And there's lots of ups and downs. But now I didn't used to be claustrophobic. I just wasn't. And now I fucking am. And I'm dealing with it. I'm trying to like cope with it. But it's like, was it not a horror movie? And now it is. You see my point?
Yeah.
Like, because if it's defined by me, that used to be a thriller. And now it's a horror movie.
Sure. I don't know. It could change. Maybe it's both. Maybe.
Right.
They're interchangeable depending on the person. I don't know.
I think it would be fun if we just start defining genres by like, I don't know. To me, it was hilarious. So comedy achieved. The Purge. Let's go. All right.
Also, like, I'm not just into horror. Like, let that be known too.
Well, okay. Well, then say it. I was going to say, I mean, you seem fun. Do you like to make fun things?
I love fun things. I love comedies. I love improv things. I love romance. Past Lives is great. Like, you know, if the story and the script is strong, I think I'm open to all genres.
It sounds like that's what you've made, right? Like, that's the stuff that you've been more recently spending time on rather than like some director bringing you like three romantic comedy scripts for you guys to work on. And then you work on that. And before you know it, you're like, oh shit, I like this. You're still very much exploring this new phase of making stuff. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's a good time. I think
that's a fun ass place to be.
Is always the most important thing to me. So
are you acting in this shit that you're working on behind the camera also?
Sometimes. You're doing
both? Okay.
Sometimes. I think, well, there was my first short film, I was the writer, director, and actor. And damn. I think that was, I was like, I don't know if I like wearing this many hats. Because, like, to me, like, I have written and acted in things. Before then, I had written and acted in things, and I had written and directed things, but I had never been an actor and a director. Mm. And that was interesting because I was like, ooh, they're really separate. Like, I know some people do it and I have immense respect. I just don't know if I personally want to do that because, like, as an actor, you're in it. You have to be in it. And as a director, you have to be outside of it.
I think that's right.
You can see it more objectively when you are truly outside of it. And so, yeah.
I've never done it, but it's always intimidated me. And I've always said that if I was going to do that, I would need someone else for my scenes that I was in. I don't think I could direct myself as the lead in shit. I don't know how anyone does that unless they're just Clint Eastwood. Like, and I don't mean him specific, but like someone who's thinks about filmmaking like that, like they wake up with every shot and moment in their head and then they just go execute it. And then they go home at 3 o'clock.
Yeah. I think it depends. I don't know. I think the outside factor, though, is really important. And maybe it's just a matter of practice, of exercising those two different sides.
Right.
But I don't know. For me, I like acting in things that I've written and then given away to a director, or just acting in my friends' scripts that I like, or newer people's scripts that I don't know, but vibe with the script.
It's so fun. It sounds like you're just like all over the place making cool stuff with cool people, which I believe you told me is what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, shit. You're doing what you want to do. Sad. Sure. Oh, no. And she has a job, so she's not completely broke. It's like some kind of real life dream. I would absolutely love to chat with you in LA if you come out here and talk about what's soon to be my new favorite movie, Barbarian. I can't wait. It'll be my favorite movie I've never seen. I look forward to it. Thank you for staying up and talking to me into the late evening. It's 10:30 almost. Yeah, you're a night owl. You're just getting started. So I guess thank you for sharing your pregame with me. But yeah, thank you, Katie. I really appreciate it. I think this was really fun. And I'm excited to see what kind of stuff comes out of your little factory you're working on over there.
Thanks. Yeah, we've got some stuff. You can check out our website. We post a lot of stuff on Instagram. Raw Daisies. I'm very proud, very excited by the work that we're doing. And I think with only years to come, we will only ever grow and expand. So, yeah.
Promising. We love it. All right. Thanks, Katie. We'll talk to you soon.
It's nice to meet you. Bye, Rob.